Agnes Sassoon, Reel 3. Agnes, what kind of work were you expected to do whilst you were in Dhaka?
I saw other people working, going out in groups to work very hard, whoever was able to. And I had the opportunity, through Alex's connection, to go to the kitchen sometimes. And don't you think that you could sit in the kitchen and clean potatoes and not to be watched, you were hit. While you clean the potato, I got a lot of bangs on my head, on my shoulder. They saw, schnell, schnell, quick. They didn't really need it quick. You know what I mean? I mean, we didn't have the energy or so on. And I never saw those potatoes for us. That was probably for the staff. And then one day, it was very hard to get out to the village, to the peasants, because from Dachau, they took people who could cut trees and things like that. But Alex arranged it one day that I gone in the group and he thought I can get some food.
How would Alex be able to arrange?
Well, he had one or two soldiers there that he was the favorite of. And he had, sometimes when they were in good mood, as I mentioned in the book, they treated him like a favorite dog, and the other day they kicked him. But when he was lucky and he played some music, he could get a favor out of them. And even sometimes they fed him, but if he would give it, they would know that he gives it to someone else, and they would just as well hit him and punish him. You know, it was a very strange world. They were always drinking beer, and he was playing music. And they realized that he's half Jewish, actually.
What kind of music? He
played Tchaikovsky. I don't know. I was then not understanding at all, just a bit of music.
What instrument did he play?
Yes, he played. He knew to play piano, I know, but he played violin and piano.
And he played to the Germans.
And he played to the Germans, and they used to like classical music and all sort of music, and they served their beer, you know, they drank the beer, and they did it. And that's what he told me. I never was there. And when we couldn't talk like I can talk with you. I mean, you can imagine it was only scraps of minutes while he passed on to me something, when he smuggled something to me. Other people didn't have to see, because if they saw, they got, for instance, jealous, like I mentioned before. I could have just one person that reported and I'm dead. And I was very ill, and he did try to keep me alive. On the end, he was shot, and I will never forget him ever in my life, ever, ever, ever.
And he got you onto this work detail,
yes.
Going out of the
yes.
camp.
Yes, but then in another time, when I worked on the farm, when we slept on the farm, and I mentioned it also in the book, and I picked up some grains from the chicken feed, and a very fat German woman, peasant woman, who was the owner, big farm, one of the owners, or who she was, reported it. That few grains reported to the German guard, there were many guards, and he nearly tore out my mouth and took out the two or three grains which I had in my mouth. So that's what I made me think, that they say we didn't know about it, and only the soldiers. Well, what the hell was it? An ordinary woman of a peasant farm to do such a thing with a little girl or an old person or any person, to go for three grains instead. I never can imagine myself, even if they would be my biggest enemies and murderers, in Alcatraz or everywhere, I would do and try to do my best to give them something, whatever ever criminals they are. So I just think myself that they were under mass spell of Hitler, mass spell, that they were not in their right mind.
They too treated
the Jews. Oh, they were like from another planet, but they were not the same human being, what any human being is supposed to be. And today, Germany, I see individuals, but it took me a while. I never hated them for the past. I don't know, I can't hate. I just thought that they were they were the dehumanized people, which were not humans, and we were the humans. That's what I thought always, and that's how I could survive, because I just thought they are just like a mechanized games, like Doctor Who now or something. All these stories, which is unbelievable and is not really true. And, you know, it's just a dream. And I was thinking many times. There were one or two who you could say that in all the time, one or two only in the whole time, that I could say that they have some human feeling. So suddenly the new Germany wants to know, and they don't let them know about it, because the Holocaust is not the same like books like mine and individual people's. Many people write about hate. And that I agree they shouldn't have, because this, a book, a child's book, has to be objective, or a grown-up book, and to say, well, they were not normal, really. It was a phase, a not normal phase, and it should not happen again, ever. And that's the whole reason that I'm willing to go all through and repeat it and go out of my way to get it for no earnings and no money, and I would do anything to get it to Germany. Because the kids there shouldn't be not left and not right, because they would understand with their heart. Because from all this Holocaust hymn, they couldn't understand it. And Anna Frank was a nice story, a true story. But then she was unfortunate as well. But she was in a house, whatever bad circumstances. On the end, she came to Bergen-Belsen. But yet, she didn't stand so much up. She didn't live among those outside. She had a lot of anxious minutes, but she was still looking out for the trees. You remember? And that's a marvelous, adoring person she was. But it's not the same to go through like the grown-ups go through, and we survived when they were family camps where they could buy out people for money in Bergen-Belsen later from Switzerland. So I heard it later. And I was going through all this and could escape, because when they told me go right, I went left. When they told me left, I went right. And when I look back, I played a game like a child. And when I was in the dangerous minutes, I felt it very bad, very dangerous. But I always hoped and believed in God. And I always hoped that tomorrow will be better. And it was worse. And I thought, worse can be. And when Alex gone, I finished. I thought I finished.
Can you tell me about this incident where Alex came to visit you in your barracks when you were ill?
Well, I was very ill. And he came several times, but that time he brought, I don't know from where, he took some little milk or something. And he, usually when they recognize him, even if he would be coming in, they wouldn't shoot him from the tunnel. And as he climbed, he always knew when the lamp goes round, because he was not allowed to speak to women.
It was a woman's barracks.
Yes, yes, it was separate from the men's. This is also complicated to explain it, you know. And it was a big danger even to him, that he knew. But a couple of, or three or four, he had probably some people that they knew him. And then it was also the kapos were very dangerous. Jewish kapos. You know, they were just the same under the terms of who can be, I mean, for your own good, you hit your fellow friends. Once I came across with a kapos as well. And it was, she was a rabbi's daughter. I heard it later. She looked beautiful, as I described it. She had boots. She could travel with certificates. And she used to bugger me all the time. Sorry this for this word, but all the time. And she looked... And I was the little mingy thing. I once wanted to go to that place, to the ladies. And it was not a lot. It was curfew. And she came at me just for no reason to hit me. And she was alone. There was no German soldier beside her then, yeah? And I came and I told her in her face, I can't understand what you want from me. I'm a little nobody. You are going in this nice, elegant clothes and with good food, and you are a rabbi's daughter. So what do you want from another Jewish girl or for any human being? I thought she will kill me, and she didn't. She kept away from me since then.
What do you mean?
She kept away. Whenever she saw me in the camp, whenever she counted me, and she was with this stick, she looked away and she didn't come near me. God saved me.
So previously she'd hit you regularly?
Yeah.
With
but you know, I mean, regularly what I mean, not every day. Whenever I came across somehow, or she was near me, just not really hard, you know.
But
then when that time when I was on my own and I did irregular thing, well, I told her what I thought. I thought if she kills me, she kills me. You know, a child has no fear.
And she left you alone then?
She left me. She never could look at me anymore in my face. She always left me out. You know, when they counted the apple and they said, you go here, you go there, she never told me anything.
What did the rest of the inmates feel about the capos?
Well, I don't know. I don't hate them, even them. I have no hate in me, but I think they lynched a few and they jailed a few. And I think if somebody could come out from a camp well looking, she must have been a capo or he. Because I don't think that anyone after that, even to being a few weeks or a few months in a camp, could come well looking out. So that's what my own feelings and opinion is, you know? Because you couldn't, if there were family camps where they paid up money, let's see, they could have some parcels or something. But in an ordinary camp, no way, no way. And after Dachau, when Petrushka died, Alex, I thought it end, really end, and I didn't even think of the future. When I wanted to touch that vial.
Can you tell me about that incident now, Alex?
So he got out from... he was always watching the lights. He knew exactly the minutes when the lights are coming in the evening.
Searchlight,
right. And somehow the searchlight didn't come regular time, and they didn't see who it is anyway. And he just shot. He was an idiot, because I think if they would have known that it's Alex, he wouldn't have shot. He just did not know whether it was a woman or, you know...
He'd come to give you some milk.
Yes.
What was the matter with you?
Well, I don't know. I think I had by then typho already, keep coming and going, because all my hair fell out. They shaved it, but it came out anyway, my hair, you know. And I was very sick. When I was in typho later, in the hospital, I knew that I had maybe that disease the same. It was just going on, you know. I just don't know how I survived, you know.
And as Alex left your barracks?
And as he left it, there, I heard this shot, and everyone looked out, and then the Germans came in and pushed everyone, and everyone had suffering, not only me. I didn't care whether they shoot me or not. I jumped out after him. Went on his body, I described it, and Alex was everything for me. And even though I never, nothing can make me upset. When I am upset and really upset for no camp reasons, no, that's gone, bye, finish, gone. It shouldn't happen anymore, and it's gone. But I always see his face with these black, beautiful eyes and alabaster skin, well, very deep in. And I will always see that eyes, and it was just a few weeks away, the liberation, really.
And how long had he survived in death?
10 years, nearly.
And he was shot
yeah.
3 weeks before.
So, you know, it's not 3 weeks before, it was more, but then because then we had to go in other camps. You see, the Germans were in disarray then, by then, and I thought it's finished now. But it wasn't finished, it was even more and more and more walking.
What happened when you were holding Alex's body?
Well, I thought they will kick me, they will shoot me, they will do anything. But funnily enough, they just... I didn't even feel the pain, you know, but they didn't kill me. But then I went and I wanted to touch the wire, the fence, and I didn't care if they shoot me. And an older man, an older SS man, or Wehrmacht, I don't know even what, but he was not a young... This is the only German face in uniform that I can remember. He said, no, don't do it, because there is no electricity at all. We haven't got in the house electricity. They don't put electricity, you know, in the fence, because we haven't got it. We'll be soon finished the war, and you will survive, and we will perish. And that's what he said to me, and I really truly remember only this man's face. And I, as a child, I wrote the truth, and I tell the good and the bad, right? And that's how it was, and he was in tears because he loved Alex, and I think he wanted to shelter me because of him. His guilt came up or something. This was the only man when I came as with human face to face, yeah.
Were you shocked at his reaction?
When he told me there's no electricity in the wire, I mean, he risked his life, really, you know? I mean, they didn't have anything anymore to eat. They were in disarray. They were in running. I didn't know that, right? But we had to walk then, because again, walk, and the dead bodies were put on the wagons, and I don't know what to do. And if they told, if somebody couldn't walk, they told them to go on the carriages. And I knew that they told us who goes on carriages that they are going to hospitals. I knew who is going to hospital, it will be dead. So I had these instincts in me. I wasn't enough big or clever, but I had this instinct. I never went to that carriage. Like I didn't go to that wagon for the children.
Were there any gas chambers in
Dachau? Yes.
Dachau?
Yes.
Did you know what they were?
I didn't know, actually, then.
You didn't know at the time?
No, I didn't know at the time. They told us, but I somehow, Alex told me, I thought Auschwitz is only for the gas somehow, you know?
Did everybody know about Auschwitz?
Yes. The one soldier came to the other soldier. The couples were lovers to the soldiers.
Yeah.
It somehow came through between the older people, you see, grown-ups. But for me, I was everything in a dream, you know. And I just did my instincts, what I wanted to do. But then I was very sorry there were some people. I was crying. I saw people crying for their children. I saw praying people, you know. And when I wanted to cut out my mind, not to see the dead bodies, not to see the beatings, not to feel it, I cut out my brain and I wrote my book, chapter by chapter, everything what happened.
In your head?
In my head, because a few times I tried to get hold of paper and pen, and my writing was not that fabulous, because I was not so much that fabulously educated, right? So the scraps of paper, once they nearly killed me for it, yeah?
We found them.
Yes. And since then, I just wrote my book, and the minute I was free.
What did they do when they found you, scraps of paper?
Once they made me kneel down, and they hit me here.
On the back of the neck?
Back of the neck. Once they squinched out my hand, like this.
Squeezed your wrist?
That when they burned it, that was later, but... I can't tell you, I mean, so many things they done for, but it was not the torture of the torture camera, but just the way that they beat you. They didn't care whether it's on the head or on the neck or on the... Sometimes I saw they shoot me, made me kneel down. But you see, I'm speaking a lot about beating. Many people won't find it that they were beaten so much. But you see, the thing is, who worked, they were not beaten so much.
But you were too young.
And that is not only because whoever couldn't work wasn't enough strong, and it was not in the gas chambers, and it was not sent. They had more opportunities to beat us and to have us for the apples, you see. And that is the explanation if many people say that I can't understand how you were beaten so many times. They had much more opportunity to get hold of us to beat us.
Because you weren't working.
Because we weren't working, and we were all the time going, doing some useless work or some work which they just repeated to do. Was standing hours in the upper tills. A woman collapsed behind me, and we wanted to steer her away. We still were human. We wanted to help her, right? And when they realized it, that we wanted to steer it, they beat everyone around us. And they made us stand 2 hours longer in the cold.
On a pill?
Because we wanted to hide the woman.
Were you clothed during Appel, or were there any naked?
Slowly they took away. What they did, we went Dachau, and then I was also in Landsberg. In Landsberg, 11, it was near to Dachau. I understand, I don't know. They said then that it belonged to Dachau. That was, for me, a bit better, because there was a German medical woman who put me in the ward there. It was a little bunker with four beds. She made me like I would work, do something there. And there were, every time they done it with us, every camp, new camp, whatever we had still on the top of, or underneath that clothes what they gave us, some underwear, they always took it away. I think that was only for suffering. We had to strip, because they called it delousing, yeah?
Delousing.
Yeah, and they it took the stick, that soldier or that officer, and aus! Herunternehmen! Everything, I understood German, so I was quite lucky with that. Because when they spoke German, the others didn't know. I knew what will happen, you know.
So he'd pull at your clothing with a stick.
He said, Herunternehmen, all right. So I made myself, I do it. And then he looked off the other one already, following, continuing to tell to the other one. And I put it back quick and put back my striped clothes.
So you managed
so
to keep
I,
your
I really swindled. You know, I did learn from Alex. He told me how to do this. Don't, if you get frightened and you do, and they beat you anyway, you just try to get away with it.
So you'd have to get dressed again quickly to keep your underclothes, otherwise they'd take them off you.
Yes. And they said to take it off, but occasionally I didn't. And then I got somewhere else, something else, another rag. So the rag got lousy, got put it in the snow that the lice should go out. It's not nice to talk about it, but so it was. So who was the human, I ask you? Who could do this with old and children and not children? There were no children, really. I mean, in family camps, there were lots of children in family camps, but not many children could survive. There was another young girl with me who was older than me a bit, and she went crazy, unfortunately, on the end of the walking. And she started...
Is this walking from Dachau to Landsberg?
It was between the walking after Dachau. That she was... we was in the hay, and she slept, and her bread was stolen. And she accused everyone that maybe it's true, it was stolen, her bread. And she from then started to get crazy. And, you know, we had to hold her back, because as we didn't want her to be killed... And that was in the between we arrived, before we arrived to Bergen-Belsen. And she was a very beautiful-eyed girl, you know. And though she was older, she stuck to me. She felt that I'm support. And she didn't have confidence later when her bread was stolen. And my bread was stolen as well. Not the same time, another time. But, you know, people were hungry, so they did these things, you know. And once we got bread... For a week or what they said it should keep, but I know that is forever, because we will be dead by then. I thought so, because they gave us the whole bread, a hard bag. And you know what? We had to throw it away because we couldn't carry it. We didn't have the energy.
So they gave you the whole, whole ration.
The whole ration for the whole, because I thought we will never see anyone. And this girl on the end, I saw her in Bergen-Belsen. I went to look for her when I had an opportunity. She was in this crazy ward where I saw she couldn't recognize me.
What were the food rations like at Dachau?
Nothing, so to speak. There were soups occasionally, and you didn't know even the timing.
Would you get something each day?
Sometimes, maybe a week or two gone without any bread, but maybe we got a hot, warm, something soup-like thing, but no bread. Bread very rare, and if you had a piece of bread, you had to save it, really save it, to cut it with this wire, to save it, even if it was one slice.
How did you come to leave Dachau then? What happened?
Well, I think they had to evacuate because they had to run. And they wanted to kill how many they could. And they made people who couldn't walk anymore to walk. And some, they put it on these carriages and everything. And I think they just shot them or just they let them die. And we went in a sample camp on the way for one night. I thought it is a heaven, because the first place in winter I saw flower, I saw cleanliness, tidiness, and Red Cross flag, and all sorts of things, and it was everything organized. I thought here will be fine, maybe it is the end.
You thought you were going to stay.
Well, there was a sample camp, they call it Muster Camp, where the Red Cross comes to inspect it occasionally, yes, International Red Cross, so they told me later, right? And I had a terrific toothache, and we had to queue up for soup, and I didn't have any energy. What was in the soup? You had tins. And if your tin got lost, you couldn't have any other tin, so you couldn't have even a soup. You understand? So it's up to you to hang on to things. And you couldn't sometimes because they made you lose it, you know? And then and somebody was shivering, couldn't get soup. And if you wanted to help, then you were nearly killed for it. So, you know, you had to be very careful to do these things. And we did it. We did risk our life for this. And then when I went back to this bunker, very clean, very tidy, and they were really good, and this toothache came on me, and I started to scream. I knew what it means, screaming. It means death. And then two soldiers kicked me all over, and they said they'd take me. They wanted to shut me up. They pushed me down, my inmates, like I did with this other girl, you know?
To save
you. Yes, and I couldn't. I just had a terrible toothache, and I just, everything I could bear, but I couldn't that. I had to scream. They came in, what's loose? And they kicked me all the way, miles down in the camp. It's a very tidy camp it was. I didn't see so many soldiers with guns and so many inmates outside. And it was really a barrack of hospital. And there was a dentist with a white cloth and an SS woman. All the beautiful, they're all beautiful, they were. And a Jewish dentist. And they apparently, later I found out from someone, they were lovers. Don't know where that was. And, you know, he just sat me down in the chair, pulled out my tooth. He said, sorry, I haven't got any anesthetic. Pulled out my tooth. They gave me something. And the soldiers took me back, and I kicked me back, but I didn't believe it that I'm alive, and I'm out with my tooth.
So they kill you for screaming.
Unpredictable story, which is true, everything. You didn't know from one second to the other. Then the next day, we were on our way.
What was this sample camp? Was it what the Germans were saying they usually kept?
That's right. That's right. That was probably where they said that is like a heaven, you know, to the other camps, because it was clean. It was given some food and a bit of bread, and it were flowers and were tidy. It were doctors and dentists, as you see.
So this
and
was the kind of camp that the Germans were telling the Red Cross that all the Jews were in.
That's right. Probably. I think so. I don't know, but I think so, because that what they told me, this is a Muster Camp. I do understand, the others didn't understand. It was not written Muster Camp, because it was written,
I don't know what was written,
but my marked clothes, but I don't know what camp it was, but I know that it was the German son, this is a Muster Camp. I translated it, this is a sample camp. Yeah? So next day, on our way, so I just couldn't believe it, you know. I always hoped God will help me. And